sort of point in Bitcoin's history where we found out that the users were actually in charge, and that the miners and big companies, you know, tried to push something through and they couldn't. I suspect that, you know, once this shell game plays out a little bit with a lot of rehypothecation and a lot of redemptions and stuff like that, I suspect that a lot of these investment banks will attempt to take control before that happens so that they could get bailed out should some situation like that happen, where they're doing naked short selling, where they're lending out shares or Bitcoin that doesn't exist, and playing all these financial games. They're going to want to bail out it.
Welcome to the Swan Signal podcast, a production of Swan Bitcoin. Swan is the best way to accumulate Bitcoin with automatic recurring buys, instant buys, and now serving the globe with Swan Privates, our international white glove service for individuals and corporations and entities looking to buy $100,000 or more per year of Bitcoin. Get in contact with us at swanbitcoin.com/private if that's you or someone you know. In this one, Jimmy Song, Bitcoin educator and developer, and Mark Moss, an investing and finance YouTuber, join us. Glad you found your way here. Enjoy. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Swan Signal Live. This is episode 52. I'm here with Jimmy Song and Mark Moss. Really excited to dive into this one with you. Before we do, a quick note from Swan, and I just want to let everyone know that we're also live casting this or live streaming this into Clubhouse. There's a Cafe Bitcoin room, so if you are a Clubhouse kind of person, you can head in there and listen, background audio this thing, and Jimmy and Mark will be joining us for a Q&A after this episode. So check it out in Clubhouse, Cafe Bitcoin. Just look for the Swan Signal Live with Jimmy Song and Mark Moss room, and we'll be in there after the show. All right, so this podcast, the show, is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the best way to accumulate Bitcoin in the United States with automatic recurring buys, with instant buys, with wires supported up to $100 million buys. We just launched Swan Private at swanbitcoin.com/private to support this deluge of demand that we've received since Michael Saylor really kicked off the trend of using Bitcoin as a corporate reserve asset. We've had entities and corporations and high net worth individuals, trusts, nonprofits, entities of all kinds, even municipalities, reaching out to Swan to get them on to a Bitcoin standard, or at least start stacking a bit of Bitcoin in their treasuries. So that is really exciting, taking off right now, just trying to keep up with that demand. It's very, very bullish for both Swan and for Bitcoin in general. So check out Swan Private if you or you anybody you know would like to start stacking some sats. And remember, we do have a referral program called Swan Force. That's at swanbitcoin.com/enlist. And that does apply to Swan Private. So you can stack a lot of sats if you can find some businesses in your social network that would like to start stacking as part of their treasury. So get out there and start landing some whales, and it's good. It'll be good for you as well. You can stack sats while you're we're stacking new Bitcoiners for the network. Let's see what else we have. Lots of amazing educational content. We're dedicated here at Swan to Bitcoin education. It's we like to think of it as our marketing. Our marketing is education. That's part of what we do here at the show. We're on Clubhouse a lot. We helped kind of kickstart this Cafe Bitcoin thing, which is now become adopted by the wider community and has rooms going almost 24/7. And we have rooms in seven different languages now, a room focused on Africa, a room focused on Asia. So we're sort of taking this geographical and different language approach to Bitcoin and really opening this Bitcoin education up to the world on this really amazing new platform that seems to be really useful for Bitcoin education. So definitely check out Clubhouse. I think the Android app is coming out pretty soon. There looks like there's an open source one you might be able to track down. And if not, we are streaming some of these rooms into YouTube. So the Q&A will be streaming here afterwards as well. All right, so let's dive into this episode. Jimmy Song is with us. He's a Bitcoin educator. He is also a Bitcoin developer. He's written several books that are well-loved and highly recommended in the Bitcoin space. Welcome, Jimmy. How's it going, man?
It is going well. I'm in the middle of cooking a steak, so if you see me going in and out, that's why that's happening.
Nice. No problem. I mean, that's definitely a worthwhile reason to go off camera. Just, you know, don't tell us how good it is. At least mute your mic when you're making your delicious steak savory sounds. Mark, how's it going, man? Welcome. Mark is a YouTuber. He is at youtube.com/MarkMoss and talks about finance and investing and more about Bitcoin. How's it going, Mark?
Yeah, it's going great. I love talking about the need for good, sound money like Bitcoin, decentralized money. So happy to always be here. And man, Jimmy, you got me hungry. Another carnivore here on the call.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not full-fledged carnivore, but I don't know. I'm moving. You guys have been moving me slowly for 3 years. I'm on the keto step at this point.
Yeah, I'm not full-fledged either, but
it is great though. Yeah,
it is my goal by the end of this episode to get you guys to become carnivores. Let's see if
all right.
that works.
All right. We can definitely get into it. I'd like to hear the case for carnivory over keto. But maybe we'll save it for a little bit later. We can kick it off just talking about some news. Mark, let's start with you, man. We had this report dropped yesterday, and it seems like we absolutely do have news coming out of the financial sector on a regular basis now. It's, you know, several times a week at this point is the cadence, moving, you know, toward daily big news from big banks and corporations, investors, et cetera, who are revealing positions in Bitcoin or otherwise, you know, showing that they're very bullish on the asset as a reserve currency, as a reserve asset, as collateral, just as a way to avoid the onslaught of inflation that we're seeing. Citibank joined those ranks yesterday with a report about Bitcoin that was essentially came down to, we're really, really, really bullish about Bitcoin or it's going to fail completely. So where do you think we are at this point? Is it even a possibility in your mind that Bitcoin fails at this point?
Who's it for? Mark?
Or Mark? Yeah, sorry, Mark. Mark. Yeah.
Was that question Mark to me?
Yeah, it was to you.
You were asking about the Citibank news up? And the bullish news on that?
Yeah. Citibank and basically that it came down to whether or not Bitcoin will thrive or die. And was like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Citibank stuff in general, but I also thought we could start with whether or not you think it's even possible for Bitcoin to die at this point.
Well, I would like to address that Citi news, if I can, for a second. I just did a video yesterday where I kind of broke into that. There's a leaked report that came from Citibank, and they talked about, I'll read from it. It says, Bitcoin is the new gold. And are you hearing me okay?
Yep, yeah. I got you, man.
And they said that they were talking about Bitcoin being the new gold, and then they talked about how, quote, it's a natural store of money. And then they went in, they started talking about central bank digital currencies. And they said that central bank digital currencies are a double-edged sword because it makes it easier for stimulus, but the other side of it is that it makes it easier for capital confiscation. And they said both of these scenarios are positive for Bitcoin in the 21st century, which give us the digital equivalent of Bitcoin versus fiat, as opposed to the 20th century, which was Bitcoin versus fiat digital versus the 20th century, which is gold versus fiat paper. And so I thought that part was pretty amazing right there. They not only do they see, you know, it being a better store of value as far as regards to gold, but even as these new central bank digital currencies are coming out. So it's not just kind of what they're seeing right now, but kind of the future that they're seeing.
Yeah, thanks for that summary. Jimmy, what do you think just in general about these big institutions coming into Bitcoin? Do you see it as inevitable and do you see it as posing any risk to the network in any way? Maybe it's too early, maybe, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, good question. I don't know how used to controlling things investment banks are, but surely it's a lot because they're able to manipulate the Fed in various ways and put political pressure and so on. So, you know, whatever they do is probably going to make 2x look like, you know, peewee football. And this is like, you know, the big leagues here. We'll see exactly what they do, but I suspect at some point they're going to try to take over Bitcoin, and it's going to be a lot more pressure than 2x was. But I think that's still quite a bit off. At the moment, they're focused on making sure that they have exposure to the asset, which makes sense. There's no yield anywhere. So it makes sense that they're going to the one place where there's yield, and that's Bitcoin. You know, as far as like, is there any reason to think that Bitcoin could be stopped in any way? I think it could be slowed down, but I think as far as its success, I see it as inevitable. I really don't see anything sort of slowing down this train at this point.
Yeah.
What I would add onto that would be that I did also kind of make the case that maybe Bitcoin is too big and it's in the government's best interest to let it keep going at this point. So they wouldn't want to shut it down. But kind of to Jimmy's point, you know, having these financial institutions coming in, they're going to want to control it. And that's really what it always comes down to is, right, Bitcoin is decentralized. Nobody controls it, but they're going to want to control it. So like that is kind of the risk that I see. And so maybe some of the choke points would be obviously the one they're already talking about would be being able to custody it on your own, right? Having your own wallet. That'd be one issue. The other issue is, you know, I'm not a big fan of these ETFs that are coming on board. You know, what we've seen through the gold precious metals markets, you know, silver 250 paper ounces for every one physical, 500 paper gold ounces for every physical. And so it's just a massive leverage for manipulation, but also it distorts the demand, supply and demand equation. So instead of buying Bitcoin, I can just go buy paper Bitcoin. And so that messes up the supply demand. So I think those are probably the two areas that I would look at, kind of weak areas where the financial system could financialize Bitcoin, so to speak. I think there's built-in defenses for that, but those are some areas I would watch.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before on this show, the idea that like, how do you defend against rehypothecation of Bitcoin? And that's definitely a subject that I think we should hear and talk about and hear from Jimmy on. And I also want to just put a peg in the idea of, you know, we can go in and I think talk to some viewers about the history of SegWit2x and how, you know, companies in the Bitcoin space came together and sort of paired up with big miners in the space to try to push through a particular code change as sort of a way to understand what we learned about Bitcoin governance from that scenario and how big corporations might band together, much bigger corporations might band together in the future to try to push through some protocol changes that would be and they would see as favorable to their control of the network, for instance. So, Jimmy, do you want to just kind of lay that scene in the context of setting up a conversation about how, you know, these bigger corporations might try to do something similar in the future?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the rehypothecation argument, I think, comes into this because what a lot of these, ETFs and things, what they'll try to do is to rehypothecate or naked short sell or what have you to add to the supply that doesn't exist. And this happens in the gold market. This happens in the stock market. This happens all over the place. And it's because there's a central controller. So I think the way it plays out is that they're, something like an ETF, and they're going to, essentially issue more shares than they actually have to back it. They're going to try to fractional reserve it. The thing about ETFs is that usually they have some sort of conversion mechanism. So if you buy spiders and you're, a hedge fund that wants to arbitrage that, if spiders goes up above the nominal price of the S&P 500, you buy the basket of shares, but it's only in very large amounts. So you go buy the entire basket, and then you convert them to the components of the S&P 500, and that way you can essentially sell them and make the arb on the difference. So ETFs, I think, have to have something like that. So this will be sort of our defense against rehypothecation, or sort of the games that they play with a lot of these things, is this ability to convert it to real Bitcoin. And at that point, if they don't have any to give out as a result of too many people redeeming, that would essentially be a bank run. And at that point, you know, all the naked short sellers would have to come in and make it whole, and it would absolutely devastate them. So that mechanism is what they're going to try to prevent. And you know, with respect to SegWit 2x, what had happened there was that the miners and a lot of large businesses within the Bitcoin ecosystem like sort of banded together, and they wanted to create a situation where they would get to, they wanted the whole community to forcibly upgrade. So they told each individual that was running a node, hey, you're going to have to upgrade if you want to continue on Bitcoin. Most of us that were around at the time just kind of said F you, and you know, like basically discarded their thing. And a week before it was supposed to actually launch and do that, they abandoned it. And that was a big sort of point in Bitcoin's history where we found out that the users were actually in charge, and that the miners and big companies, you know, tried to push something through and they couldn't. I suspect that, you know, once this shell game plays out a little bit with a lot of rehypothecation and a lot of redemptions and stuff like that, I suspect that a lot of these investment banks will attempt to take control before that happens so that they could get bailed out should some situation like that happen, where they're doing naked short selling, where they're, you know, lending out shares or Bitcoin that doesn't exist, and playing all these financial games. They're going to want a bailout. And in order to set up for that, I think they're going to try to take over. Like I said, I think it's a long time away, but this is something that we're going to have to get ready for as a community and make sure that they're not able to essentially get bailed out by the protocol, because protocol ain't changing. You're not getting more than 21 million.
Yeah, Mark, you want to jump in? I would like to add, I mean, just kind of game playing that a little bit, right? Like there is a little bit of natural defense in there, right? Where, you know, we're obviously gaining more and more people. I know Swan's mission is to onboard, 10 million people or whatever it is. Like, and so maybe by next year, there's 1 billion users of Bitcoin, right? And so really anyone can just fork the coin, right? Fork the chain, but the value comes in the network effects, right? Of that network itself. And so let's say that you have a handful of institutions that want to capture that network, but the 1 billion people don't want that network to be captured, right? So that could, all that value could always be forked over to a new chain. And so, I mean, that can get into a big situation, but I mean, you know, if 1 billion people want the chain to be over here and it's been captured by a handful of corporations over here, there could be a scenario where it has that kind of defense built in, maybe. I don't know what you think about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean that we'll see what they try, but I'm sure the attack will be a lot more sophisticated than 2x was, and it'll probably use every dirty trick known to man. And you know, investment banks and a lot of these financial institutions are used to you know, having safety nets provided for them. And if they don't have it, then they're going to feel uncomfortable. And, you know, they like playing the financial shenanigan games. They're very good at influencing people with money and so on. So they're going to try something at some point. When that happens, I don't really know. But I suspect it will be to defend against some sort of like bank run, which I think will happen if I think it's inevitable. I think it's definitely going to happen at some point. And they don't want to be the ones that are completely wrecked as a result. So, you know, they like playing these games. They want to suppress the price. They'll probably lend out shares that don't exist, like they did with GameStop and many others. But yeah, that's where I see this going. What they will try is really only limited by their own creativity, and our defenses hopefully are up to that task, because that will be a major point in Bitcoin's history, and it will prove you know, its true anti-fragility going forward.
Two things I would add, just add on to that again, would be one, that when something like that would happen is probably when we see those tools being built up. So lots of ETFs starting to stack up that are not physically settled, but they're cash settled ETFs, because that's the tool that they're really going to probably leverage. So I think we'd look for when those really start piling up, that could be a problem. But the other thing that also gives a little bit of a defense, you know, we talk about it happens in the gold markets, but you know, if you're an institutional investor, like to actually take custody of all that gold is a pretty big deal. I mean, it's very expensive, very time consuming. You have cost of storage and security and all these things. Other assets are very similar. So you don't always want to physically settle them. You're just trying to get participate in the USD value of it. Whereas Bitcoin can be, you know, basically custodied and stored at almost no cost. I think we'll see those security protocols getting better and better and better, the UI, UX, et cetera. And so maybe that changes it a little bit as well. But yeah, the future is unknown at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, of course. And having this conversation, because I hadn't really thought through this potential attack, and I'm glad Jimmy brought it up. And maybe we can talk through just a little bit more, but I think the defense that we would have to have against it, right, is education and teaching people what Bitcoin really is, what it's about, what makes it important, how money has gone wrong in the past, and why it's important to be decentralized and to take ownership over your money, run a node, et cetera. I feel like in the SEGWIT 2x times, the market cap and the number of people involved were quite low. And so it was possible for a band of 1,000 Bitcoiners roughly or whatever to make a lot of noise on Twitter and sort of basically call a bluff from stronger entities and get them to capitulate and prove that, you know, miners and businesses want to mine on and serve the chain that users want to be using. So that principle to be, you know, as a defense, right, that we need to prove that users, the vast majority of Bitcoin holders, are behind this change or not making this change. And if there are, you know, Bitcoiners that are holding on Robinhood or PayPal where you can't even withdraw, and that's a significant portion of quote unquote Bitcoin holders, that seems like the next battle that might, you know, be similar to this in style would be way harder, like more orders of magnitude harder to defend against. So Jimmy, if you agree with that, or first of all, do you agree with that? And if you do, like, you know, what can we do differently to sort of scale up that defense?
Yeah, I'm not sure the attack will come necessarily as, hey, you guys all need to run this particular hard fork or something. I mean, thinking more about it, the weapons of choice for any sort of like financial institution are regulation. And this is generally what they do with governments, and they cooperate to create regulation that's very favorable for them. And if you game this out, I suspect that what will happen is they will naked short sell with their ETF. They will lend out Bitcoin that doesn't exist and so on. And at that point, they'll be insolvent. And that'll be pretty clear. People will start redeeming. And I suspect what will happen is that the government will give them the privilege that they've given to every bankrupt or many bankrupt banks in the past, which is to say, you're not allowed to redeem these, right? Like you're not allowed to take these out or something, mm-hmm. something to that effect. Yeah. And also the ETF or, you know, pseudo Bitcoin that's on these exchanges has to trade at par with real Bitcoin, something to that effect, some kind of legal tender law or something like that, that essentially equates the two. I think the black market will clearly favor the actual Bitcoin, and the people will be holding onto their Bitcoin. And most of it, I think, will be not on these exchanges, and the exchange Bitcoin will trade at a discount in most ways. And despite the legal tender laws or whatever, black markets will thrive, but then eventually, that's the direction that they'll want to do it. It'll be probably more of a regulatory legal vector that's essentially a way to force people to accept the fake Bitcoin from these institutions rather than the real Bitcoin that's actually, you know, provably on chain and so on.
Right. That makes sense.
What one thing that I think could add a wrinkle to that, I mean, if we want to play, you know, hopefully play a little devil's advocate on that, would be, you know, I think Bitcoin is definitely a lot different than any other asset in a sense where it's open, right? So it's an open network and we have on-chain data. We have access to see how many coins there are, where they're at, et cetera. And so right now, you know, most of this manipulation happens in a market that you have no visibility, no transparency in. And so, you know, how many gold ounces are held by this ETF, and we don't really know these things. And so I don't think it's just the public that cares about this. Other financial institutions, whether that's Fidelity managing people's money or those people that have their money going into those funds, they care about that. And if those ETFs, those funds that are trying to do the manipulation are lying about it, and now there's total transparency to see that, I think that by itself could have some defense. And like I said, not even just among the people like us, but even other financial institutions are like, I'm not going into that ETF. You don't have any money. You're 5-to-1 leveraged or whatever it may be. And so maybe that transparency aspect of it will make it a lot harder for them to do that.
Yeah, I suspect that, you know, proof of reserves and things like that will become much more prominent. Whether, you know, they're going to subject themselves to that, I don't know. But this is where consumers that are more discerning will go with the ETF that's, you know, showing proof of reserves for the number of shares that they've issued. But then again, like, you can have proof of you can say that you've only issued 100,000 shares with this much Bitcoin backing it. But if you lend out shares that don't exist, you're effectively lending out Bitcoin that doesn't exist. So I'm not sure how you do that unless it's some sort of more verifiable system than the current one that we have. And who knows? Maybe this brings like all sorts of reform and creates a market that's more transparent in that regard and shows, okay, well, now we can prove that there's only this many shares issued and this many Bitcoin that actually back those. But all that is, I think, kind of secondary. At some point, like, people will be demanding real Bitcoin, and you know, ETFs are just one step along the way, and it's you know, at best temporary. You know, it'll exist for some time, but the people that like just hold that instead of real Bitcoin, well, they're the ones that are most in danger. And I think that there'll be a minority compared to the vast majority of Bitcoin that will be held privately. We're seeing that right now. A lot of exchanges have Bitcoin, but they're seeing outflows like crazy because of situations like this. And that's ultimately the big defense that we have against it, not like proof of audits or whatever.
Yeah. I think another potential defense, especially on the regulatory front, is that we're, you know, seeing more and more Bitcoiners in governments, and they're becoming more outspoken and adding laser eyes to their profiles. And, you know, like, this is, they're not being shy about their being very much in favor of Bitcoin and pushing it as a something that's fundamentally good for America and for the world. And so if that continues, that trend continues, and as we all know, like, Bitcoin incentivizes its own marketing, its own development, its own like representation in government even. And so if that trend continues, which I obviously believe it will, it has empirical proof, then, you know, we have a majority or like a vocal minority in Congress making noise for pro-Bitcoin legislation, saying, hey, this is a way that we can really clean up our financial system with this technology. We can have a more transparent system. This is good for business. This is good for consumers, and really make that case. So that could also be a forum for defense on that front, which I'm excited about.
I also would say that, you know, we've also reached a level of entrenchment, maybe taking a word from Preston, but right, we have, as you mentioned, right, we have now people in levels of government. I mean, Gensler going in at the SEC and Loomis in and the senator, et cetera. And, but not just that, but we have now, you know, the Michael Saylors, the Elon Musk, et cetera. I saw, was it yesterday? I think Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, said he took a 3% allocation. But what I really liked about what he said is that of all the businesses that he consults with, which I would imagine there's a lot of them, they're all talking about how to move their treasury into Bitcoin. And that was a pretty big statement. And so I start thinking about all these businesses, all these businesses, not financial firms, but businesses, the Michael Saylors, Elon Musk, and the smaller players that are holding Bitcoin on their books. And they're not going to want the market to get destroyed by these ETFs either. And so like we're building up an army. And so, you know, the mom and pop retailers at the bottom with their, you know, half a Bitcoin only have so much weight. But when you start getting businesses and then even billionaires who are invested, who are entrenched in that fight, you know, there's more opposition to go. We'll continue to recruit more.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Quick thoughts on Coinbase IPO. We all, I think, are in agreement watching on this show and probably listening in Clubhouse that Coinbase is not the preferred, or at least our preferred or recommended way to buy Bitcoin, but they have arguably done a lot to make Bitcoin more accessible to a lot of people with creating a regulated, relatively user-friendly exchange back in 2014 and being one of the first on that front. So they have exposed a lot of people to Bitcoin, made it easier for people to buy it over the years. Let's set aside the argument, obvious argument, that they also are a shitcoin casino and have misled a lot of people into losing a lot of money because of that fact. What do you guys think about the price of the Bitcoin or the Coinbase IPO? It's in the futures market looking like a market cap of about $100 billion. That's pretty amazing. And what do you guys think it will do for the Bitcoin industry, not just, you know, the exchanges, but also this kind of emerging set of services and businesses that are Bitcoin only?
Yeah, I think they're, you know, priced like a lot of assets on the market right now, a lot of equities, yeah. Which are just insane multiples of revenue or and revenue, not even profit, right? Like,
right.
It's kind of an insane valuation in my mind, especially because they have so little Bitcoin in their treasuries. They had something like $130 million worth of Bitcoin on their balance sheet as of December 31st, 2020. Which works out, I think, about like 4,000 Bitcoin or something like that. They're like tiny companies that have more Bitcoin than that. So to me, they're overvalued, like most equities on the market. You know, they're not trading at reasonable multiples. It's becoming, the stock market is a proxy store of value at this point, rather than cash or anything else. Bitcoin obviously benefits from that dynamic as the Fed continues to expand the money supply. But as far as their valuation, it seems kind of high to me, especially given the, you know, low Bitcoin exposure that you're getting out of it. You know, they are making a profit. So maybe there's some people that are thinking, hey, like, if I buy this company, I'm kind of like buying, you know, the people that are selling shovels to the gold miners or something like that.
Right.
Just, you know, kind of, it could make sense to some degree, but I mean, you measure any of these things against Bitcoin and they do very poorly. I suspect that Brian hasn't done a great job managing their treasury. You know, they are like a lot of VC funded startups. They're probably, you know, wasting way too much money on like ping pong tables and, you know, random, you know, massages or something like that, which honestly, like, would have been much better off if they just created an option pool of Bitcoin for their employees or something like that, which a company like Blockstream has done. Instead, you know, it's all about their stock. You know, it doesn't surprise me that it's gotten that high. I suspect that this will probably, you know, start off a wave of other companies maybe getting acquired or at least being in talks or something like that. I suspect that, like, just given like the potential buyers, it'll be probably like banks and stuff like that, and the people and the companies that are being bought are not going to want to be sold to banks, right? Like, a lot of the people in Bitcoin didn't get into it so they can sell out to a bank. So you know, they're going to try, but I suspect it won't really happen. But at the same time, like, it will drive a lot more investment into the space and hopefully a lot more competition for Coinbase. I've heard that Kraken is raising at about a $10 billion valuation. That seems like a much more reasonable bet to me. And I suspect that they have way more in treasuries than Coinbase does. So once they go public, I'll bet you that they're going to overtake them pretty fast. But I don't know. That's my gut feeling.
Right. Yeah. Mark.
Yeah, I would say that I was also shocked at how little Bitcoin they hold. I mean, especially in today's age when you're seeing Square jumping in. And I mean, obviously all these public companies jumping in and buying Bitcoin. And then here you have a company who made its name off of selling Bitcoin and they hardly hold any. So that was kind of shocking. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say what it's worth. I mean, you know, as Jimmy just kind of pointed out, I mean, the ratios, the valuations today are just insane. I mean, Tesla was at like 1,000 times PE or whatever. And so, I mean, I don't want to wait 1,000 years to get my money. I want to be alive, right? So I don't know where they're getting these valuations from. I think it was valued at about $8 billion in 2018. So in 2-3 years, it's gone from $8 billion to $100 billion. But I think that there's going to be massive demand for it, not because it's the best company in the world, but just because I think institutional investors are just looking for any way they can to get into the Bitcoin, maybe even the blockchain space. We've seen this. I mean, in the 2017 market, we saw companies, I think, what was it, Lipton Iced Tea, like rebranded. It was like Lipton Crypto, and all of a sudden, like, things are blowing up. So I think there's an appetite for it on Wall Street. Probably a lot of them don't really know what they're getting into. And my guess is it's probably going to be pretty hot. And I don't know if it's worth it, but I guess people are going to pay it.
Yeah, I agree with all that. It's a good thing in terms of bringing more attention and investment to businesses in the space, and hopefully we'll give some startups access to capital at a lower, you know, amount of equity they have to give up otherwise. So net, hopefully.
If you think about that, though, Brady, I would agree that it's a really good thing, right? Because there are companies that are building on Bitcoin, right? Like building Bitcoin products. And maybe at this point, it's like still hard for them to get that attention they need and to raise money. Yeah. And so Coinbase is involved in lots of other coins for sure. And, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about them. But to your point, right, they're bringing money into the space, bringing attention. And what happens is all those investors that missed out on this $100 billion IPO are like looking for the next one. And so Right. Now there's these smaller companies that are building on Bitcoin. And hopefully, I think it'll make a big difference for them.
Yeah, I agree. Although it is when you're more directly faced with the idea of buying equity in a Bitcoin company or just buying the Bitcoin, I mean, it's too obvious. Like you could think about that with any equity and you ask yourself that question. But when you're investing in a Bitcoin company, it's just like staring you right in the face. So, you know, if I was an investor, it's a hard decision to make, which is what you want to see. You want to make it harder to invest in a company so that they can have to prove themselves and not, you know, be held up by money printing.
I think there's, you know, there are some investors, the Warren Buffetts of the world, right? Warren Buffett would never buy gold, but he did buy a gold producing company, right? So he always said he wanted to buy companies that are actually making things, producing things, have profits. And so depending on what the fund is and what their angle is or mandates are, they need to buy productive assets. And so, you know, buying Bitcoin is still a risk and who knows how much is going to go up in the future. And so a lot of companies maybe just need to buy productive companies. And so I think there's a need for it in the market.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Someone in the chat just reminded me, and I heard this morning, that the St. Louis Fed has just stopped publishing the M2 money supply numbers. Mm-hmm. This is obviously expected, an expected kind of thing. I mean, we've been talking about this. This is how they manipulate numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if they redefined M2 or replaced it with some other measure that is completely different than what it has been. This is what they do with the CPI. Do you guys have any thoughts about this manipulation?
Well, the big one is that the M2 was discontinued and they came up with something M2SL. It's not entirely clear what the difference is.
Well, there you go.
They did change the M1 quite a bit. So now it used to be just checking accounts. Now it's also savings accounts. You're not getting any money off your savings anyway. So they might as well, that sort of thing. So the M1 is almost at the level of M2. So they made like an M2SL and so on. No doubt that they're doing it for some reason. Whether it's nefarious or not, we'll see. But yeah, the M2 has been going up at an insane clip, for the last year. I suspect that it'll go up even more after, you know, the stimuli that are on the way for this year and next and so on. So, this is kind of, they move kind of slow. This was probably, you know, in the works for a little bit, and everyone's been complaining that the M2 is expanding too fast. So
there you go.
This might be putting a brake on it. I have noticed that the M2 hasn't increased that much in like the last 6 months. Whether that's credit contraction or some number fudging in the back, it's hard to tell. And maybe this this change will allow them to fudge the numbers a little more, or to hide what they actually did the last 6 months or something like that. But regardless, it's a government statistic. It's hard to trust. And, we in Bitcoin Verify don't trust. I suspect it's expanding pretty fast anyway.
Yeah. Mark, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely just agree with what Jimmy said. I think he said whether they're doing it for some nefarious reason or not. I think for sure it's about transparency, and so they're just trying to make it harder and harder to see. And kind of like what he said, it's government data, and it's hard to trust that. I mean, just look at the whole system is built on CPI. And so they're using CPI to measure everything. And that's like the most faulty metric in the world. I mean, they've continued to change how they calculate it. And so, we do our best, the best that we can with the tools that they give us. But they're continuing to make it harder and harder, and they just don't want that transparency. So I'm guessing that's why they did it.
So I agree with that. I'm glad to have your comments on the M2 stuff. And like I said, I'm not surprised to see it. We'll probably see more of this happening, trying to hide what's really happening as we move forward into this brave old world of fiat collapse. So I wanted to shift the conversation for the last part of this episode to talking about the morality of Bitcoin. Jimmy's just published a book called Thank God for Bitcoin, which makes a moral case for, basically for backing Bitcoin, for spreading Bitcoin, for trying to help it be adopted and replace the dollar as the global reserve currency and basically rebuild the foundation of civilization. And I see money as a pervasive force. It's a subtle force, and it's astonishing how the downstream effects accumulate and eventually just kind of affect everything, right? So it's I think absolutely critical that we fix the money in order to fix the world. And I think, I'll go even as far to say, I think it's the most important problem to fix right now, because it literally affects our ability to solve every other problem we have. And I think I could say that and with accuracy and without, exaggeration. So Jimmy, we'll start with you. I'd love to hear a bit about your book and how your evolution of your understanding of Bitcoin having morality and its moral impacts and outcomes.
So we started on this book because we were frustrated with the two books on sort of like morals of money production. There's one book by Guido von Hulsman, The Ethics of Money Production, fantastic book. Honest Money by Gary North, another fantastic book. The only thing that we didn't like was the fact that the ending was all about, hey, we need to get back on the gold standard. Let's go write our politicians and get a political action committee together and, petition the Fed to go back on a gold standard and so on, which if you know anything about politics, is completely and utterly unrealistic. So for us, that was the frustrating part of those books. And like for writing this book, Thank God for Bitcoin, was all about making that argument that Bitcoin is the way to opt out of this current corrupt system. And the system is just horribly corrupt. I call it a cesspool of theft. It's all set up for rent seekers, a lot of injustice, a lot of rich people getting richer while poor people getting poorer, a whole system built just on debt. It causes all sorts of problems in politics and personal lives, even churches and organizations. All of them are up to their eyeballs in debt, and it causes a systematic fragility and a moral, a moral indifference that's actually quite shocking. And it's ended up with a system that's caused a lot of people to become very materialistic, very political, very much ends justify the means kind of mentality. And we think that, you know, going towards Bitcoin will fix a lot of that. And yeah, and that's essentially what the book is about. It's the current system is corrupt. Bitcoin is different, and it'll fix a lot of these ills.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? I mean, first of all, have you come to understand Bitcoin in this way? And if so, you know, what was your journey to get there, to think about it beyond just, you know, the economics of it, for instance?
Yeah, well, I love to spend a lot of time thinking about the kind of socioeconomic philosophy side of things. I haven't read the book, but Jimmy, it sounds like a great book to read. But I would definitely say the exact same thing that he's saying. And I look at it this big tree, like this big oak tree with all these leaves, and you have all these problems in the world and in society, and each one is like a little leaf, right? Where each individual little problem, whether that's incarceration rates or divorce rates or homelessness or obesity or whatever, right? And they have this big tree, but at the root, instead of like taking each leaf and trying to like solve each problem one by one, like at the very base, the root is the money. And so like, instead of trying to like take each leaf and try to like debate about each leaf, like let's just go straight to the root, like cut that thing down, right? And that's kind of where I see the money. And so, I mean, I think that every problem could be traced back to the money one way or another indirectly. And a lot of it just comes because, as Jimmy said, like the whole system is set up for rent seeking, right? The whole system is set up for manipulation, for people to game the system, for people to get ahead at the expense of other people, as opposed to having a fair system that everybody has the same opportunity to go through. And so, you know, I think it was in The Road to Serfdom, they were talking about like laws and regulations, and he was basically saying how like laws are supposed to be put ahead in advance without thinking about who goes through them. And that way, whoever goes through them, it applies to them all equally. And everything that we're seeing today is all arbitrary. Everything is different depending on who you are. And now, you know, what sex or color or race or whatever you are. But the whole system is set up like that, and it all starts with that money. And so, yeah, I mean, you fix the money, you fix the world. And I know for a lot of people who haven't spent a lot of time really thinking that through, it sounds like a big statement. And I know some no corners hate to hear that Bitcoin fixes everything, but it kind of really does. And the only way to do that, I think, kind of to Jimmy's point about that book, a lot of those books point to the gold system. And I was a gold bug in 2008 and 2009. I became very disillusioned with the financial system. But what I realized is I wasn't really a gold bug. I was really a sound money advocate. And so I think that was a little bit of a difference. And really, it's just that F.A. Hayek quote that I always hang on to, right? And we'll never have sound money until we take it out of the hands of the government, right? And so that's where we're at. And I think we'll have a fair system, a just system. Not that everybody has the same outcome, but at least everybody has the same opportunity. I think, you know, a lot of people today, we can see the populism uprising all throughout the United States and throughout the world. People are unhappy. They're not exactly sure what it is. They know the system's rigged. They know there's a reason why they can't get ahead. And they're not sure why it is. So they're angry. A lot of people are angry at rich people, you know, and they think it's because of income inequality. But if you think about like sports, for example, like take LeBron James, best basketball player maybe or whatever. But like nobody's mad at LeBron James because he's so much better at basketball than everybody else. And I think that's because they perceive basketballs as being a fair set of rules that everybody has to comply to the exact same rules. Whereas in society, those rich people, everybody knows they're using a totally different set of rules that everybody else, a different set of opportunities that everybody else has. And so, we go back to a sound money system and take away those advantages. And I think it fixes a lot of things.
It is really astonishing. And one of those moments, like when you start realizing the downstream effects of fixing the money and how just fundamental this really is. And it's completely flipping the script. It's the opposite of the kind of money that we have now, right? And I'm seeing, you know, some of the greatest minds in the world popping into Clubhouse, Eric Weinstein and Lex Fridman, some of these people who are really highly regarded and in very, you know, different aspects of the world outside of our sort of insular Bitcoin world, which is becoming less insular. And they're listening and their minds are being blown a little bit by these ideas that money is, you know, that fixing money will have such a massive impact on the world. And people waking up to that, I think, is really the kind of the final final deal. Like if you understand that, then, you know, you're all in. You have that moral sort of obligation or mission driven approach to Bitcoin. And that's, I think, where most of us are at this point. Jimmy, you need to go grab your steak, man. Can you give us a website or URL to find your book and the rest of your work?
I have all three books on programmingbitcoin.com. And, you know, I'm on Twitter at Jimmy Song, Medium at Jimmy Song. My newsletter is jimmysong.substack.com. My show is called Off-Chain with Jimmy Song on YouTube. I have a podcast called Bitcoin Fixes This, which you can find on Anchor and on YouTube on my channel.
Jimmy is an all-star Bitcoin educator. He covers all parts of Bitcoin, the philosophy, the economics, the tech. He's a full-stack Bitcoin educator. Really appreciate your work, Jimmy. We will see you on Clubhouse here in just a little bit. Enjoy that steak. Mark.
Thanks.
Mark, thanks for being here, man. Tell us a little bit more about your work and where we can find you, man.
I wanted to ask Jimmy how much butter he puts on that steak. I love to put butter on my steak. I'm mostly just on YouTube. You can just find Mark Moss on YouTube. I'm pretty active on Twitter as well, which is just the number one Mark Moss. You know, like I said, I thought I was a gold bug. I really just found out that I was actually a sound money advocate. And so I spend most of my time just talking about that. And to make it super simple, like fiat money bad, sound money good. So a lot of time talking about the Fed reserve policies, runaway stimulus, et cetera, and how bad that is. And then, of course, on the other side, the solutions that we have for that, which, of course, always go back to getting our money out of the banking system and having a sound money again. So if you like those topics, follow me on YouTube and Twitter.
Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it. I'll let you take a quick break as well, and we'll see you over on Clubhouse here in just a little bit for the post-show Q&A. Thanks for your time, man.
Cool.
See you there. All right. Yep. And thank you, everyone, for being here, watching, listening, wherever you are. We do this every Tuesday here at youtube.com/swansignal. We do it on Twitter, at Swan Bitcoin. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitch. And we're on Clubhouse live, simulcasting this as well. So five locations where you can find this show. If you prefer the audio archive, in your podcast app, check out swansignalpodcast.com. We have another show that we do every Friday called Swan Lounge, on this YouTube channel. It's a hangout, more informal, bring in some Bitcoin friends and just hang out and talk about the week and tell stories. It always ends up being a fun and entertaining conversation. So subscribe to this channel if you are into getting some great Bitcoin content and some fun Bitcoin content for that matter as well. Go ahead and like this video as well, please, to help us spread it around YouTube. And if you're not yet already stacking with Swan, please get over to swanbitcoin.com and check us out. Give us a shot. We make it super simple for you to just set up automatic recurring buys. Think about it like paying yourself in Bitcoin. It's what any auto stacking service does. So just figure out whatever amount you need to pay your fiat bills and figure out the amount that you want to save in Bitcoin or pay yourself in Bitcoin every month and just set that up as a weekly buy or a daily buy or a monthly buy on Swan. And your paycheck will automatically be converted, that percentage of it, into Bitcoin and stashed in your Swan account. We do support automatic withdrawals. We have no withdrawal fees, no withdrawal limits. You can withdraw all your Bitcoin at any given time, which is something that a lot of other exchanges don't do. And people will find out and be frustrated with when you go to withdraw your Bitcoin. Not at Swan. Automatic withdrawals are awesome. Our friend Gigi coded that up for everyone. You can add an XPub as well to, if you're withdrawing to a single key wallet, you can add your XPub there and we'll generate about 500 addresses, put them in our database so we don't store your XPub or even take your XPub over the internet. So it's as safe as we can possibly implement this XPub support. So you get a fresh address on every withdrawal automatically, set it and forget it. There's just one click to verify your withdrawals in your email and that's it. That's as simple as we could make it. And of course you can manual withdraw, put new fresh addresses in there, withdraw to your multi-sig account or something. So really trying to follow Bitcoin best practices for all of the Bitcoiners out there. This is a company run by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners and trying to do the best we can to spread Bitcoin knowledge and awareness and use in the best way possible. I also mentioned at the top, Swan Private. We spent a lot of time in this episode talking about Bitcoin being adopted as corporate reserve assets and, you know, high net worth individuals and people saving money for their children, et cetera, and trusts. All of that can be done with Swan Private at swanbitcoin.com/private. Swan Private is international. All right. So if you're looking to buy over $100,000 in Bitcoin in the next 12 months, you're eligible to go through Swan Private, and that can happen anywhere in the world, wherever you are. We are onboarding international businesses and individuals regularly. So really excited to be able to work with anyone in the world at this point who is looking to stack that amount of sats. We also have a new site that was just launched, bitcoinerjobs.co, bitcoinerjobs.co. Our founder, Corey Clipston, worked with another Bitcoiner whose name is escaping me. Brecky, ping me in the chat if you remember who this was, but, helped put together this site super quickly. And these are Bitcoin-only companies, jobs at Bitcoin-only companies. It's a great place to find, you know, a way to get into the industry. You know, there's just building this budding sort of Bitcoin-only industry that we're seeing come to fruition here. And as we were talking about in the episode, I think we'll accelerate as we get more investors' eyes on this space. And the Coinbase IPO will be something that will kind of bring that spotlight to the sector. And there will be more Bitcoin-only jobs out there, Bitcoin jobs at Bitcoin-only companies. So you have been building your resume by, you know, posting and on Twitter and, you know, reading and understanding this thing and what's going on. Continue to put stuff out there, and you'll make a name, you know, make a name for yourself, get noticed, and then get hired by these Bitcoin companies. You can find all of those jobs at bitcoinerjobs.co. And don't forget, we are moving over to Clubhouse here in just a moment. So if you're listening on Clubhouse, we'll be there with you soon. And if you are listening or watching elsewhere, hop on to your phone, your iPhone, and open up the Clubhouse app and come join us. You'll find us in the Cafe Bitcoin room, one of the Cafe Bitcoin rooms. That club has grown to, I think, over 60,000 followers now and members combined. So it's really exciting to see that club growing. And there's usually a Cafe Bitcoin room going pretty much every hour of the day at this point. So come join us on there and pop in and ask Mark and Jimmy some questions that you may have thought of during this episode. And join us again next week for Swan Signal Live on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Take care, everyone. Thanks to Jimmy and Mark for joining us today. You can find Jimmy on Twitter at Jimmy Song. That's at JimmySong. And you'll find Mark at 1 Mark Moss, at the number 1 MarkMoss. I am at Citizen Bitcoin, and Swan is at Swan Bitcoin. On behalf of the Swan team, thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Swan Signal podcast and found it useful. If you did, please go and review the podcast on Apple iTunes. It really does help spread this Bitcoin education around the world. It's fun to join us live on the YouTube broadcast at youtube.com/swansignal. Head over there, subscribe, and turn on notifications. We have a lot of fun in the live chat, and sometimes we work in questions from listeners. Remember to check out Bitcoin TV at bitcointv.network or at that same YouTube page, the Swan Signal YouTube page. It's 24/7 streaming content of the best Bitcoin education out there. You can subscribe to this podcast if you're not already at swansignalpodcast.com. Swan Signal is a production of Swan Bitcoin at swanbitcoin.com, the best way to accumulate Bitcoin in the United States with instant buys, automatic recurring buys, and Swan Private, our white glove service to help onboard individuals, corporations, and entities looking to put at least $100,000 to work over the next 12 months. That service is available around the world. Swan has gone international with Swan Private, swanbitcoin.com/private. See you next time.